be up, probably be up for a Grammy for Best Album of the Year. We'll see if that actually pans out. My name is Nikki Strong, and this is VOA1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo, Brian Lynn, and Kelly Jean Kelly. But first, this report from Alice Bryant.
As coronavirus infection rates rise sharply in the U.S., the White House is pressuring schools across the country to reopen for the autumn term. At a recent White House talk on school plans for the fall, President Donald Trump argued that some officials are keeping schools closed for political reasons, not because of health concerns. And Education Secretary Betsy DeVos told governors during a recent conference call that she opposes plans by some school districts to limit in-person classes to only a few days per week. Such pressure from the federal government adds to an already complex situation as schools across America make difficult decisions about how to restart classes. The new normal will include school buses taking fewer children, online learning, outdoor classrooms, and quarantine rules for infected children. Plans for the coming school year are taking shape each day. They are different from district to district and from state to state. Debates about such plans have been highly emotional, with anger growing among parents and administrators. They have been made more troubling by record numbers of COVID-19 cases reported each day. In Florida, some school districts want students back in the classroom in early August, but cases there have been rising. On average, Florida has been reporting more than 7,000 new cases a day. That is more than 7 times what the state was reporting 1 month ago. The state of New Mexico has been able to avoid major outbreaks. The state is planning a model that includes online and in-person learning. Parents in New York State have demanded that schools reopen in the fall. In Maine, outdoor learning is planned. Districts nationally are putting together rules for wearing face masks. Some districts want all students to wear them. Others plan to limit the requirement to older children. Each of these decisions tries to balance health concerns with regaining as much normalcy as possible. Parents are tired and desperate for help after months of balancing full-time work and full-time homeschooling. Children separated from their friends have a strong desire to socialize. Teachers remain concerned because so much is still unclear about the virus. Districts are worried about being able to pay for added supplies, including masks and more buses. And school officials said the rise in virus cases could ruin reopening plans before they are even put in place. If we see large outbreaks happening across communities, it's going to be very hard to keep schools open. Dr. Ashish Jha told Fox News Sunday, a television program. He is director of the Harvard Global Health Institute. Schools across the U.S. shut down suddenly this year as coronavirus cases first began rising. That led to a mix of distance learning, poorly planned homeschooling, and, for some families, no schooling at all. Districts are now turning their attention to how to create more structured environments. But the debates have been filled with uneasiness. Near Rochester, New York, parents strongly supported fully opening schools. A group of them recently gathered outside a school administration building. They held signs that said, "No normal school, no school taxes." Christina Higley is a parent in the small city of Webster, outside of Rochester. She said she had started a Facebook group to demand answers from school officials and be part of the decision-making process related to changes at local schools. The discussions there launched a movement for reopening schools. "There's a lot of parents that are saying, 'Open our schools. Let us have the decision if we feel comfortable sending the children into them,'" Higley said. "The decisions are even more complex in districts where case counts are rising. In Manatee County, Florida, the working plan is for all younger students to return to school full-time on August 10th. Older students would depend on online learning while they are brought back into school buildings slowly over time. But that proposal is not finalized because of a sharp rise in infections. The area recorded its highest number of new cases in a single day in late June. If a student is confirmed to have the virus during the new school year, classrooms or whole buildings would need to be carefully cleaned," said Mike Barber, a district representative. "Students and workers with confirmed infections would not be able to return until they had tested negative 2 times. Medical experts have expressed concerns for children's development and mental health. The American Academy of Pediatrics is a professional organization of children's doctors. The group said it strongly supports the goal of students being physically present at schools. In Cape Elizabeth, Maine, Shail Norris said she is especially concerned about children who could face abuse at home and parents who risk losing their jobs to care for their children. Norris has 2 children who will attend high school in the fall and runs a nonprofit organization that fights sexual violence. Maine has not had a major coronavirus outbreak. It is now reporting only a small number of new cases each day. Still, the state's largest school district of Portland has left all choices on the table: a full reopening, a partial reopening, or fully online learning. I'm Alice Bryant.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Lightning. is one of the most powerful forces in nature. Scientists describe lightning as a huge burst of electricity between clouds, the air, or the ground. These bolts of electricity can heat the air around them to temperatures 5 times higher than the surface of the sun. And that is really hot. When you watch lightning, you know it's fast. That is why English speakers use the expression lightning speed to describe anything that is super fast. A runner can have lightning speed. An Italian restaurant can drop off a nice warm pizza at your front door at lightning speed. And unconfirmed stories often spread online at lightning speed. So lightning is fast. It also can be dangerous. When a thunder and lightning storm starts, it is best to find shelter. Do not stand in an open field. Now, to protect buildings from lightning damage during a storm, you can attach a lightning rod to it. A lightning rod is a long piece of metal. This metal draws lightning away from the building. People can also act as lightning rods, but in a different way. They attract attention, criticism, and even anger of other people. A lightning rod is someone who becomes the target of criticism to draw attention away from more serious issues or other people. Issues and even objects can become lightning rods too. Anything that comes to represent something that people criticize can be called a lightning rod. When speaking about lightning, we have another common expression. Lightning never strikes the same place twice. We use this expression when a very unusual event is not likely to happen again to the same person or in the same place. It can be used when something good happens, such as winning a game of chance, like the lottery. That does not happen very often. Here is another example. Let's say your favorite sports team is having a bad year, but they were still able to defeat a much stronger team. However, the next time they face that stronger team, your team might not be so lucky. You know what they say, lightning never strikes twice. We also use this expression to say a bad thing won't happen again. We use this to reassure someone, trying to make them feel better. For example, let's say you are watching a baseball game and get hit by a baseball in your seat. Your friend might say, "Well, you're safe now. That can't happen again. You know, lightning never strikes twice." That probably will not make your head feel any better. And you can tell your friend that scientists say that lightning can and will strike the same place twice. Whether for something good or bad, the underlying truth remains the same. The chances of some unlikely thing happening twice is very small. And that's Words in Their Stories for this week. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
The coronavirus health crisis has led to delays for thousands of people wanting to become citizens of the United States. The federal agency that processes citizenship requests, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, suspended its in-person services in March. At that time, The agency said there were about 110,000 people waiting to complete the final steps to citizenship. The process of becoming a U.S. citizen is known as naturalization. The final step in this process is to take an oath of loyalty to the country at an official ceremony. Some individuals have been able to complete the process by taking part in an unusual drive-up ceremony. The drive-up events are designed with physical distancing in mind to protect people from the coronavirus. Those taking part are required to wear face coverings. People remain in their vehicles while taking the citizenship oath. A government official stands a safe distance away to complete the swearing-in process. One such ceremony took place recently in a parking garage near a federal office building in Detroit, Michigan. When 60-year-old Anita Rosenberger entered the garage, she was a British citizen. 30 minutes later, after taking the oath, she drove away as a U.S. citizen. It was a nice experience in spite of the fact that I was in the car by myself with a mask on, Rosenberger said. And I will say that I will remember this. Similar drive-up ceremonies are being held across the country, but possibly not for much longer. USCIS says a budget crisis could force the agency to temporarily release nearly three-fourths of its workforce. If this happens, it could further delay the final citizenship steps for tens of thousands of people. The citizenship agency has not explained how it will operate if it does not get $1.2 billion from Congress before August 3rd. It told the Associated Press that all USCIS operations will be impacted by the release of more than 13,000 workers. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Ulysses S. Grant. He took office in 1869, but his presidency is not what made him famous. Grant is best remembered for being the commander of Union forces at the end of the Civil War. He led the United States to victory over the Confederate States of America. Many Americans also remember Grant because of the unusual story about his middle initial. When the future 18th president was born, his parents named him Hiram Ulysses Grant, but the boy was known as Ulysses. When Grant was a young man, a member of Congress appointed him to a top college, the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, New York. The congressman did not know Grant personally. He thought Grant used his mother's family name, Simpson, as his middle name. So the congressman called him Ulysses S. Grant. The middle initial S became official. Years later, Grant joked that it did not mean anything. During the Civil War, however, Grant's middle name did come to have a popular meaning. In a famous battle in the state of Tennessee, Grant's army overpowered their opponents. The Confederate general sent a note asking for the terms of surrender. In other words, what would the Union Army require of them if they withdrew from the battle? General Grant replied, "No terms except unconditional and immediate surrender." The answer did not please the Confederate general, but he agreed. In the North, people celebrated the victory. They began saying Grant's first two initials stood for unconditional surrender. Grant was born in the state of Ohio. He was the oldest of six children. Grant's father worked as a tanner, a person who makes leather from animal skin. As a boy, Grant helped his father, but he did not like the work. He said he would not do it when he was an adult. So, when Grant was a young man, his father asked West Point officials to admit his son as a student. The Grants had little money to pay for the boy's college education, but they knew he was intelligent and skilled, and West Point was free. In exchange for their education, West Point graduates serve in the military. Grant probably did not seem like a soldier. He was quiet and sensitive. He hated seeing men die in battle, and he questioned the value of war. But he turned out to be an excellent military leader. After he graduated from West Point, he fought in the Mexican War and earned medals for bravery. He was given more power and added responsibilities. However, Grant was lonely. Early in his career, he married Julia Dent, the sister of a college friend. He was devoted to Julia and their four children. But his family could not come with Grant on all his deployments for the military. They were separated for years at a time. Without his family nearby, Grant began having problems with money. Some people said he also drank too much alcohol. One day, Grant resigned from the Army. He returned home to his family. At first, he tried to farm, but he could not make enough money. Then he tried other jobs. Finally, he asked his father for help. His father gave him a job, but it was the one the young Grant swore he never wanted, working in a leather shop. Then things took a surprising turn. The Civil War began. The Union needed experienced military leaders. Grant accepted a position leading a difficult group of troops. He was able to train them and earn their respect. Quickly, Grant's public image as a military leader grew. He won major victories for the Union in battles at Fort Donelson, Tennessee, and Vicksburg, Mississippi. The president at the time, Abraham Lincoln, liked the way Grant planned the battles. He also liked that Grant did everything he could to win. Grant permitted so many of his soldiers to die that his critics gave him a nickname, "The Butcher." Grant's methods were harsh, but effective. The Civil War effectively ended when the famous Confederate general, Robert E. Lee, surrendered to Grant at Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia. The following year, Grant was named General of the U.S. Armies. The only other person to hold that position was the military leader during the Revolutionary War, George Washington.
Like George Washington, Grant became president, although he did not really seek the position. But Republican Party leaders realized that the former general was very popular, and they knew that Grant opposed the policies of the president at the time, Andrew Johnson. So the Republicans nominated Grant as their candidate in 1868. He won easily. But Grant's popularity and ability as a military leader did not make him a successful president. Grant tried to work for the political and civil rights of African Americans, many of whom had been enslaved. One of Grant's most important acts was to support the 15th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The measure gave African American men the right to vote. At the same time, Grant tried to give states control over their own laws. So, sometimes he used the power of the federal government to protect the rights of African Americans, and he sometimes let states use violence to prevent African Americans from exercising their rights. Grant also spoke about treating Native Americans with greater respect. He used government resources to help Native people become farmers. But other government policies helped white settlers continue to push tribes off their lands. Few Native Americans saw their lives really improve under Grant. Finally, his administration suffered because of corrupt government officials. Grant himself did not get rich from their actions, but he remained loyal to people who worked for him, even when they profited from their position. As a result of all this, many Americans lost interest in Reconstruction and lost faith in the federal government. But Grant himself remained popular. He won a second term more easily than the first. Shortly after, the country entered a bad economic depression. Grant tried to improve the situation by supporting the gold standard. But many Americans, of all backgrounds, continued to suffer. Because of the problems in his government, Grant is not remembered as one of the country's best presidents. But he is remembered as a war hero and as a kind-hearted man with an interesting life. In his last months, Grant worked nearly nonstop on writing his memoirs. Final images show him covered in a blanket and with a pen in his hand, diligently working. Grant died in 1885, a few days after the book was finished. It was a major success. It earned enough money to provide for his family for the rest of their lives. People across the country mourned the loss of Grant. More than 1.5 million watched his funeral parade in New York City. He is buried there, along with his beloved wife, in a well-known memorial, popularly called Grant's Tomb. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.